Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Your Book, the podcast for literary nosy barkers. I'm Daisy Buchanan, your host and the author of The Sisterhood, a love letter to the women who shaped me. For our fifth series, we've gone in search of great American novels. This is Your Book USA, and producer Dale and I trek to the land of Mark Twain, Maya Angelou and Judy Blume in order to see what we could find on the bookshelves of some of our favourite American writers. Over the next few weeks, we'll be taking you from Greenpoint to Glendale, but this week we're in Baltimore, Maryland, home of The Wire, Fresh Crab Salad, and perhaps most famously of all, John Waters. Legendary is a tired old phrase, but there is no other word that does justice to the author and auteur, other than those he has chosen for himself. The Duke of Dirt, the Anal Ambassador, the Ayatollah of Assholes. We spoke to him following the publication of his latest book, part memoir and part collation of essential life advice. It's called Mr. Know-It-All, The Tarnished Wisdom of a Filth Elder. The book is published by Corsair, and it's as weird and funny as anyone could hope for, with unexpected pockets of sadness and sweetness. The chapter on Summers in Provincetown made me cackle, but thinking about the way he grieved his beloved friend and collaborator Divine is making me weep now. Anyway, we visited John in his beautiful book-filled and, my goodness, do I mean book-filled home in Baltimore, and talked to him about art book hoarding and assholes, figurative and literal. The first thing I saw when I was looking over there is that amazing edition of The Loved One. It's beautiful.
Oh, God, I have to look at it. Yes, I love that movie and I love the book. So, but it's a paperback, right? It's like one of the cheap mass market paperbacks.
Well, the one you've got is this like gorgeous sort of hardcover.
Oh, it's
first
a hardcover one. I have to go look. So, you know, I have like 11,000 books. So when you mention one, I have to.
Brush it over with me.
Oh, yes, yes.
One here.
I found this. It was $15.
Wow, because I was trying to read the inscription in. So
well,
so
that's not my. That it came with that. You know, I don't know who gave
so
that.
So you're not W. Campbell on his 26th birthday.
But there's some very good used bookshops in Baltimore where you can find things. And I go to bookshops all over the world, so I find stuff everywhere. You ask me where I got each one of these, I wouldn't remember. But over here is mostly my favorite fiction on this side of the room. So I have, you know, some of my favorite artists. Ann Tyler from Baltimore, Julian Barnes from UK, who I love. Gordon Lish, James Purdy, William Burroughs, Jean Genet, all the obvious ones. Tennessee Williams, Edward Albee, William Inge, Margarita Duras. I never know how to pronounce his name.
Oh, gosh.
Vitole Gombrowicz. I never know how to pronounce
that
his name. But he's great.
I don't
Baron
know.
Baron Corbeau, Jane Bowles.
Can you tell me about that Polish man, Witold.
Oh, he's just very, very funny and writes. He was always against the government there and wrote plays and very cutting novels. And he's really worth reading. His diaries are great. He's been a fan for a long. I've been a fan of his for a long time. I used to work in a bookshop called the Provincetown Bookshop, which was really my education because I never went to school. So Eloyd Hanson, who was the owner of the bookshop when I worked there in Provincetown, really gave me the education and told me about a lot of writers, and I read him. So working in a bookshop is obviously the best education you can get. And also people tell me my house looks like a bookshop because I have some covers face out.
Well, you know, they're very decorative objects.
I only ones I have for decorative objects are the porn ones and the dirty ones. And then I don't think they're decorative. I think they're more like art pieces. You know, just there were so many made in the 70s and 80s that it's astounding. And they become incredibly collectible when they used to be no one wanted them. And what happened was when people died, their relatives found them under the bed and were so embarrassed, they threw them out. So people didn't save them until now. People have gotten on to the fact that they are worth money.
When you worked in a bookshop, what were the customers like? Can you remember any books you were
good
at selling?
I worked in Provincetown, so the customers were Norman Mailer, Robert Motherwell, but hippies, a lot of them. I worked there in the late 60s and early 70s. I worked in a couple books. I worked in three bookshops in my life, a Doubleday bookshop in Baltimore, the East End bookshop that was Mary Oliver and Molly Malone Cook's bookshop in Provincetown, and the Provincetown bookshop, which is still there in Provincetown, and I still go in. And so those were the three bookshops I worked in. And it was great. You met the best people. Nobody was jerks, really. You know, today there are jerks in bookshops. People that come in and take a picture of the book and go home and buy it on Amazon, they should be thrown out. That's the worst violation of bookstore manners there is. And people think, why? It's cheaper if you do that. You think, well, oh my God. If I owned a bookshop, I'd be arrested today because...
I would really like that, a bookshop with a really quite, you know, aggressive, forceful policy.
Well, I had that. Molly Malone Cook, the customer, was always wrong in Provincetown at the East End Bookshop. Now, there's a new bookshop in Provincetown called the East End Bookshop, but it's different. It's good, but it's different. We were allowed to be rude to the customers. And at the time, she very much liked Norman Mailer. So if anybody said anything against Norman Mailer, she would go over and just throw them out, get out. And if people said, do you have Valley of the Dolls, which at the time was the number one bestseller, she said, no, we do not carry that, and you should leave. I mean, she was really mean to everybody, so it was kind of exciting to work there. You were allowed to. I wasn't, but you were allowed to be.
The option was available to you. I wanted to ask, because I saw... in another room, you had, I think, Valley of the Dogs and Valley of the Dolls.
Well, I have a whole bunch of books together there. I did an art piece on them called Library Science, where I took classic or very well-known books and then the porn version separate to them. Would you like to go in there?
I
mean, there's many of them that are staggering that they put them out that I've collected for a long time. And I think I have them all in one set. Let's see,
the ones I saw were just here.
Yeah, we've got In Hot Blood and In Cold Blood.
Oh,
My Foul
classy.
Lady. Never on Sin Day instead of Someday. The Rapes of Wrath. Dial M for Meat. The Ass Man Cometh.
Please, can we have a look at The Ass Man Cometh?
Yeah, The Ass Man Cometh.
Wow, so because this is an audio medium, should we describe what's happening on
the
cover?
Well, the covers are, this is a whole series, it's just the ass man is coming. The guy's bending over the ass, the other one's got a ruler to smack him with, so I guess that's that.
I can't quite work
they
out.
They even
it's
did
like,
Around
like
the World in 80 Days,
penetration.
Which is an expression for licking somebody all over their body, but I never thought it would be a porn movie. The worst is the movie was called A Patch of Blue, and this one is A Bit of Brown.
Ah!
I know. That's probably, there's Thelma Gantry.
I mean,
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Clitty Clitty Bang Bang. There it is.
Something for the ladies.
Yeah, God's Little Faker. So I've been collecting these for forever. Even I Lost It at the Movies by Pauline Kael. I Found It at the Movies, which is about sex in movie theaters. So they're pretty, those kind of books are rare, but I know the places to find them, and I know the stores that very well...
Under people's beds.
Well, no, I go to the places that buy them from underneath people's beds. But I'm not going to tell you where.
I will respect your secrets.
My source material, yeah.
These are, I think, a little bit different as well.
Well, they're
but
all
I love
different.
These
they're
books.
Just sex ones. I'm a teenage dope addict, carnival sin girl, cesspool... prison nurse. I mean, I collect every book that has I, comma, in it. I libertine, I a lover, I a homosexual, a teenager, a pervert, I a woman. Like every book that has I, comma, a vampire, I a prostitute, I a homosexual, I a weapon, I a mobster, I a machine.
So where would you recommend that one starts in the I library?
Well, I guess I a woman. That was the most famous. Look, I even have two copies, two different editions of that one. So I would say probably that one. I a woman.
I Am by Siv Holm.
Well, it was a very famous movie, it became. And then there was I Am Man by Warhol, who parodied it. There was I Am Woman Part 1, Part 2, and in it her name was 2, which I love.
It's like in your latest book, something I wasn't aware of was the telephone calls and the women answering each other.
I've got papers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I suppose these are all different stories, but that kind of, well, you know, now it's time to put my side of the story. I, a pervert.
Well, that's, yeah, well, so. No, they're not answering. That's answer records. That's ones that one becomes a hit and then somebody answers it and takes the character and then they argue or debate something. They're sometimes sequels, but not, they're one-shot deals.
There's it's more.
Some of them don't even have copyrights in them.
Oh, so...
Or titles, or publishing companies, because they were all quasi-legal at the time.
So would that make them very easy to kind of... I suppose you wouldn't have to option them if you wanted to use anything.
Oh, you can't copyright a title anyway. So mostly it's the titles. I mean, yeah. You can't copyright a title. I don't know that there's too many studios that are knocking down the door to make, I don't know, Close Encounters of the Dong Kind.
Well, John, if I came into money, it would be yours to make that movie. What book has the most porn parodies, do you think? Are there any titles that really lend themselves to being pornified?
No, I don't have, usually once they did one, they didn't do it again, you know? I would say the I, a Woman one because of so many, even in real life, there was the movie, all the sequels, the parodies, I think that one. And it was actually directed by Radley Metzger, who was a very later well-known director, and it was pushed as an art film. It wasn't, but it was dirty. I mean, it was before porn, definitely, but it had a lot of nudity in it. It was from Sweden. Sweden meant dirty in America.
Yes, that's the code.
Yeah. And these are just, I don't know what's in here.
The
because
Proper Care of Fancy Rats is a title that caught my eye.
Yeah, I collect, my favorite one is Extreme Ironing. I have a book called that. There really is a book where people are ironing in extreme places.
How do you iron in an extreme way?
Well, I'll show it to you, it's downstairs. These are, I don't know what's in here. These are The Life of Father Divine. These are just weird books that don't fit in any other places around the categories that are stuffed. This used to be one of my assistant's offices. We have a real office now, so she goes to work there instead of here. But definitely art books are everywhere. I collect them. You know, I used to know where everything is. These over here are more just like big rig hunks. They're just titles of, you
can
know.
Can you pull out breakdance hunks?
Breakdance hunks, yeah. There's many, many hunks.
Breakdance hunks. What fabulous cover art.
I know. A lot of them, that's what they're collectible for. You know, the cover art mostly.
I also like Mondo Sexo.
Mondo, there are a lot of Mondo titles. That was something, there was many sequels because of Mondo Cani, the movie. So they had many Mondo. I made Mondo Trasho. I made a movie called Mondo Trasho. So certainly that was parodied.
Is the Slate Roof Bible is what you think it is?
Say what?
The Slate Roof Bible.
Yeah, because I have a slate roof. Oh. So I thought that was... Where do you see that one?
It's that right there.
Yeah, that's an obscure one, right? The Slate Roof Bible. It's everything you need to know about a slate roof. They're expensive to keep up. Every time a tree branch hit one, it breaks.
It might be a practice I was about to learn about, slate roofing.
Maybe. It's in this neighborhood. It's a lot of the houses have slate roofs, so that's why I have it.
I was assuming it'd be some weird sexual thing.
No, and it's not. Slate roofing is not a sexual term that I know of.
Yet. Yeah. Not a sexual term yet.
So these are just, that's the electric chair that Divine got in Female Trouble, but I just put books in it. You know, you can't tell anymore.
Oh, so what do we have here? We have Jeff Koons, Versailles.
Well, some of these books are the New York art scene. That's worth a fortune. That's a highly collectible, and I bought it then to have it. But books, you know, some of these books that I have, I'm always amazed when I look through used bookshops and see now what they are worth. Been quite amazing. So here we have the big book of pussy, the big penis book, the big butt book, and the big book of legs, and the big book of, what's that one?
I'm assuming breasts.
Yeah, yeah. So that was quite a series.
Where did they start? Did they start with
I
legs?
I think the big book of breasts was probably first, and then penises.
And
they told me that the big book of pussy sold the least.
Oh, I feel sad for the
well,
big
it's
book
more,
of pussy.
It is a little more jarring to look through it because it's almost medical.
I suppose you can't necessarily pretend that you're, I'm just very interested in them.
Well, they are because they're all vintage, so they're hilarious. And you
we've got full muff.
Full academia. I mean, so you can see the different styles in pubic hair through the years, which are something that needs to be
get up to the era of the vajazzle?
The era. I don't know. Because that started in the... before. You couldn't see that. There were no pictures of that legally till the late 60s.
I mean, I think, you know, from that brief glimpse, you know, those pictures are like beautiful and amazing. I'm going to go home. I'm going to buy the big book of pussy and I'm going to give them a sale because I feel like they should have that.
It's Tashin Books. It's quite a very well-known art book place. So they're doing fine. Yeah, if they have five sequels, you know, somebody's buying them.
Can we talk about these art books that are here on the coffee table?
These are just current art books that I have. I mean, they're all different. Zonda Rhodes is my friend. That's a show that just opened. Let's see. Here we have Sturtevant. They're just all ones I like, artists I like. Bridget Berlin, the Polaroids, I wrote the introduction to that book. They're just all ones that I either own their art or I like their art or I follow them. So these, I would say the main reason you get on this table is they're semi-current. Then over here.
Just like in a bookstore.
Yeah, exactly. New and of interest over
Sorry.
Here. So here is where more obscure little books are. Delinquency and Halloween, put out by the Satanic Temple. This book is amazing. Somebody put out a book celebrating that Notre Dame burned down called Notre Dame, an Act of God. Isn't that amazing?
I'm assuming
it's called Hell's Gates.
Very small independent press, I'd guess.
Well, I saw them a couple different places. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I think, yeah. These are just really obscure little art books that are the kind that end up being highly collectible later. Clara Lydon, just Richard Prince, really early art books that I've collected for a long time. So they're pretty good. They're ones that I keep.
What?
This is like pissing figures and statues.
Oh,
excellent. In Italy. Somebody went through and took a picture of... This is somebody that worked for Crispo, who it's anti-Cristo, about how she felt she had to be a slave for him to cover stuff. So it's an anti-Cristo book.
That's amazing. And I like the...
Well, that's one of the pieces she had to cover. That's the one she had to put on there.
Felt pinned to it.
So they're all just books that are very, very obscure. And I've collected them forever, and I still collect them. So... That's it. My house is like a bookshop, definitely.
I would love to know when you started really, really collecting. Was there a particular book that was the first book?
I didn't think I was collecting that. I just liked to read and I was a shoplifter. I stole. In the beginning, I stole all the books. Not from the bookshops I worked in, but I used to steal books. It was easy. I had a special coat and I never got caught either. But now I buy so many books that I don't feel that guilty. I've made up for the... Even from the bookshops I
think
stole
probably
them.
A thousand times over.
Yeah.
Was there a first book that you bought that was like a serious
Grove
purchase?
Press. You know, I didn't read as a kid. I hated reading because they always made us read boring books and do book reports. So I didn't like them, you know. So later when Grove Press came out and did all the things like, I don't know, Henry Miller and Genet and Last Exit to Brooklyn and those kind of books. That's when I started reading. So Grove Press is what got me reading completely. So probably the first book that I got as an adult would be, I don't know, in the 60s, definitely City of Night or William Burroughs or Naked Lunch or that kind of stuff. Beatnik books.
It's one of my favorite Simpsons jokes when Nelson sees it and right. says, I can think of two things wrong with the title of that movie.
Well, I forgot that line. Naked Lunch, yeah, and I got to know William some before he died. So, and I've been to Lawrence, Kansas many times for celebrations of his life where he lived at the end of his life.
Did you ever trade books with him? Or
no, I never traded books with him. I would buy his books and collect his books. I even have the books by his son who had a very tragic life.
I don't know.
Who was to be William Burroughs Jr.?
Yeah.
I think drugs. I think he died. I know he died, yeah. Oh, but he wrote a couple books and they're good. Oh.
What are his books?
Yeah.
I can Google them.
Speed?
I don't remember. Speed is one of them, yeah.
Gee, I mean,
so I guess if your father likes heroin, how do you rebel and you're a writer, become a speed freak? It's the opposite.
I feel terrible asking this because I'm like, you have, yeah. you know, many lifetimes of reading right here, but do you ever listen to audiobooks?
No, I never
listen
to audiobooks.
Always the print product.
I mean, I don't listen to audiobooks, even though I've done my own for all things. You know, I'm not against them. If ever you want to hear a book, it's fine with me. I just like to read. I don't read on a Kindle. I don't read that. I like to hold the book. I like the packaging. I like hardbacks, even though they're heavier. So, I mean, today I'm going to the Miami Book Fair, but my suitcase is already too crowded because I'm going away for a week in different places. So I always have way too many books with me.
When do you read?
I usually read every night. And I'm on planes almost every day in my life. So I would say if I'm not learning a speech, which I usually am on a plane, I read. I read always. I never watch TV. There's good TV on, too. It's hard not to. Every once in a while I do. But I read at night. I mean, that's how I relax, is reading. And I have read every book in this room. I have a section upstairs to read, which is, you know, 400 books probably. But still, I'll get to them.
What are you in the middle of at the moment?
What am I reading right now? The new biography of Carrie Fisher.
Oh, someone was just telling us about. Is that the one that her assistant wrote?
No, I don't think her assistant wrote it. I don't know. I just started last night.
That's a novel, I think.
Because I just finished. What did I just finish right before? Augustus Burroughs' new book, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
What's the experience like with your audiobooks? Do you read and think, yes, this is great, I'm a genius? Or do you ever read and think, oh, maybe I'd change this if I could go
back? Well, when I read it, what I realize is how many terms that I don't know how to pronounce that I've written or read my whole life but never said them out loud. I'm terrible on foreign pronunciation, so I make sure I try to do my best with that before we do it. Sometimes you think, did I say that? No, because my books are pretty well copy edited, but I understand what you mean. You think this is a little long-winded here, that kind of thing. No, to me, once you read it, it sounds more insane when you say it out loud to me. I think, oh my God, because then I have to look up at the people in the booth that work there that do every book that comes through, and I'm saying all this crazy shit that they're looking at me like, well, I guess they're used to anything. Maybe. But mostly you just realize how crazier it sounds when you read it out loud. Now, I've never listened to them. I think I do a good job on them, and I even had an Emmy nomination. No, Grammy nomination once. So, for one of my books. So, I think...
Which book was that?
It was, I think, Role Models.
Oh, cool.
Was it? Yeah, it was Role Models. And I lost to Joan Rivers, who had just died, that bitch. She would laugh if I said that.
I was
friends with her anyway. So, she would have been happy. She beat me in death. Because I always say the only good thing about Joan Rivers' death is that she didn't know she died. She didn't. So, in this room, I have fiction... And the other side, I have, that's fiction too, a lot of Denton Welsh. Let's go over here. I love Denton Welsh, he's my favorite writer, and this is his self-portrait that I got. It's the other one is in the National Portrait Gallery, so I got this from his biographer a long time ago. So that's the self-portrait that's on the cover of one of his English version of his diaries. So over here, I have Jean Rhys, who I love, Pasolini, Denton Welsh. Who else do I have up here? Philip Hoare, my good friend, who's written a lot of books. I got Norman Mailer, John Ritchie, who else?
I wanted to ask, skipping back a bit, what did Norman Mailer buy when he came in the bookstore?
Norman Mailer was very well read. He bought everything that was out. You know, he wrote politics. He read a lot. Robert Motherwell was, I think, our best customer, the artist. And he bought very expensive art books, and he would order stuff all the time that we didn't carry. So he was good. But Mailer bought, Mailer was incredibly well read, and I got to know him some, and I know his son was in Crybaby, Stephen Mailer. And I know all the whole family now. And I was very good friends with Norris, his last wife. So, and she wrote a book, so I have that too.
Oh, is that here?
Yeah, it's somewhere. Let me think, is it with him or did I? Let me look here. When you ask me to find something, then it becomes, there it is. She wrote a couple books. There's one of them called Windchill Summer. She wrote other ones too. I'm just thinking, are they here?
Is that a novel? Is she?
Oh, here's the other one, Ticket to the Circus. I think that's about her life with him. So yeah, she wrote, I'm glad I put her over with him. Or she might want to be separate. But so let me see. So that's it, and, you know, and I have like Pasolini because I love him, and I have a drawing he did over there, a watercolor. So I like to keep them together with certain people, pair them with certain people, how you file them. But these days, you know, I have an apartment in San Francisco that is crowded with books, and New York, and four floors here.
Oh,
you've seen one of books. So I pretty much know where everything is, but I used to know better.
So now, are there other books in other places? Do you have any
in New York? I have books that are usually about New York writers or about New York based some, and then I have a million art books there too. And same in San Francisco. I have books about the People's Temple. I have books about Patricia Hearst. I have books about anything that happened in the Bay Area. But I also have other kind of books too. I mean, I spread them out. I have different art books there. If I have two art books on an artist here, I'll take the other one and put it in another city. So I have something about everybody.
Everyone gets around.
Yes, they all get around. Now, the problem is, though, you know, I'm always shipping them out there, and it's like endless what it costs to keep books. But at the same time, I'm out of room in every single place.
You're just going to have to buy a new house.
No, I don't want a new house. But you can see their bookshelves are even at the top, even sideways over the top. I mean, every bookshelf is full, and upstairs they're on the floor some too. But I like to be surrounded by books, and it makes me feel comfortable. I like to look through them. I think, oh, that one, I remember that. And so it's the one thing I'm proud of, my library. It's, as I say, 11,000 books, and they're all written down and in the computer, what edition, if it's signed, when it came out, everything.
So you have an actual library cataloging system. Did someone do that for you?
I started doing that maybe 20 years ago. Oh. But then someone did all the books up till then. My niece worked there. That was her job. And she was very young. She was in high school and she had to look at some of these books. She said she got quite an education cataloging her uncle's library.
Did she read any of them while she was working?
I didn't ask her that. I'm sure she might have looked through one.
Can I borrow I, a pervert? I hear it's very good.
Yeah, no, she didn't take them home. No, she didn't do that, no. I hate lending books.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I hate. I have to keep the cover here, and you have to bring it back within a week. No, I hate lending books because people don't bring them back, and then you forget them. And, you know.
Is there anyone that you've not forgiven who borrowed a book who didn't return it? Did you?
Well, I... maybe. No.
Name and shame.
I can't name one. That means I got it back. I made sure I got it back from. There's no books that are missing.
Oh, really? That's impressive.
Well, that I remember. But certainly, yes. People don't ask me to borrow books. I hate it when people offer to lend me a book, too. I say, no, I don't want to lend a book. If I want it, I'll buy it and have it myself.
Can you remember the last book that someone tried to lend you?
No, because I always say no. I don't even care what it is.
But no one said, you've got to read this.
They say that. And I say, well, people give me books they say I got to read. Even that's hard because I have 10 books lined up that are next to read that I've bought.
And you want to say, look, you don't understand. You give me this book, I've got to put it in my computer.
No, I don't. It depends. Some of them go to a bookshop where I have a trade, books that I know I'm never going to read. Because people send me books all the time and for blurbs and that kind of stuff. So some of them I read, But others, there is a bookshop here called Normals that is a very, very good bookshop that is a used bookshop. I don't sell them, but I get trade, you know.
I think that sounds like a great arrangement.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We'll be back to John soon, but now it's time for my steal of the week. A book so valuable that you'd abandon your grandmother's heirloom Chanel handbag in the middle of the street to run back to the cafe where you left it. This week, it's Anne Lamott's Almost Everything, Notes on Hope, published by Canongate. This book might be a little marmitey for some people, but I adored it. It's a selection of essays on humanity and, as you might expect, hopefulness. Every word is written with great grace, generosity and sincerity. Lamott is a recovering addict who's seen the worst of the world but believes in the best for all of us. If you're a cynical sort, this is not for you, but if you're the kind of person who unabashedly weeps throughout Sondheim musicals, this is the book you need to read next. That's Almost Everything by Anne Lamott, published by Canongate. Now, back to John. Can you remember the last book you read that really surprised you? Was there anything when you thought, this could go either way?
Well, I haven't read it yet, but I bought it. It's that, is it French? It's the 800-page book that's one sentence.
Oh, Duck's Newburyport.
Yeah. I haven't read it yet. But I wrote a chapter in my book, Mr. Know-It-All, that was one sentence, just one chapter. So now it's even more. And I loved my struggle. I just went all through six volumes without the slightest problem. They were real page-turners for me. So once in a while, you know, I'm not afraid. I like a hard book. And I mean, not a hard back, a hard book. and so... Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm always the books that I think I'm going to like, I do, pretty much.
I think
it's an interest, an author I like, or it's an interest, or I read a bunch of reviews that were so good. I mean, book reviews do influence me. And I get Publishers Weekly, so I know everything that's going to come out before. That's my shopping guide. I just go through them and order, you know, tell my assistant to order it when it comes out.
I do think sometimes it's really nice to go in feeling like sometimes if you expect to enjoy something, I think your expectations will be met. And
yeah,
I think it's a
much
positive
I
way
am.
To be.
Yeah, if I've read a whole bunch of good reviews on something, there's a few I won't name that I didn't like, but that's because I don't say bad things about. That's not my job, is to praise things other people don't like. It's more my job. But I also still go to bookshops, though, and see books that I didn't know about and buy. So I love to do that, too.
If you were to open a bookshop, other than having a house that looks like a bookshop, how would you stock it? What would it look like?
Well, I don't think I would open a bookshop now because I go to the one here, Atomic Books, that I like. That's where I get all my fan mail and everything. So that's my home bookshop here anyway. I would just be well curated. You know, I certainly wouldn't own a bookshop that would be six floors of books, you know, that has everything. That would be almost impossible as an independent bookshop. So I guess I would order books that I like that I also thought would sell because I'm opening a business, yes. But I would have it be a lot of books facing out, and I would curate it, basically, is what I would do.
I wonder about art books because, I mean, they're so beautiful.
Art books are less and less being done these days, you know. And the one thing about, I have several art books out about my photography. And the one thing most people don't know, you never get any money from your art books. The museum or the gallery gets the money. You don't get the money.
Oh, really?
Ever. Not a penny.
So yeah, most artists. As well.
Well, they are expensive art books. The author, the artist never gets the money.
Because, you know, I think people would like maybe impulse buy a novel or a paperback or something that's like 10, 20 bucks. But
impulse buy hardback. Art books, I do.
I'm sure you impulse buy art books.
Well, because you don't see them all the time, you know, and they're not always reviewed. And art books are highly collectible. I mean, they go out of print in a month and are worth money if you got to buy the right ones. But I've never bought books to make money.
From buying them than from making them.
But I never bought books to make money. I never did that. That's why they would if I sell them.
So, were there any of these that you, or any books that we've seen that were like an impulse purchase that you ended up loving?
Impulse purchase. Well, that just would mean books I didn't know were out. A lot of times I go to art shows and they give me the catalogs. Like this is a Richard Tuttle drawing show I went to. So a lot of these are catalogs that I get once I go to the show. I don't know that any of these were impulse buys. I knew what they were.
I wanted to ask about that Amanda Lepool book.
That's her and that's her life. And it's all pictures of her. And it's actually quite good. It's well written too. Something you might not imagine.
Yeah, I love her and I didn't know this existed.
So all these books, none of them were impulse. I knew about them or went to the show or read about them and found where to get them. They're not impulse. I would say impulse books would be, I don't know what impulse books would be. Mostly I know what I'm looking for. And I order, and I buy them from bookshops, I buy them from Amazon, I buy them everywhere. I get them sent to me by galleys, by publishers, because they want me to talk about them. So I'm lucky that way. I buy books and I pay full price and sometimes. But then I go to Amazon too. I read a book and I want to get it quickly and they don't have around. I get it on Amazon. I'm not against them.
You're so aware of everything that's happening in the book universe. It sounds like it'd be hard for a book to kind of, you know, like you make it your business to know there are, you can't be impulsive because there are no surprises.
It's my business too because I have a lot of books that are out and they're all still in print.
It's a lovely way of pushing it.
Yeah.
That book looks great, by the way, because the Amanda Lepore, I was just leaving through and there's like a lot to read, which I like in an art book.
She's great. I mean, and I think she's really smart and funny, and the book is great. And she was really radical too. I mean, she took it to radical lengths.
If my hypothetical $100 billion that I brought with me in a suitcase and left in a hall, if I were to give that to you to make the movie of any book that hadn't been made,
I would never make it from a book that someone else wrote. I've never made a movie I didn't think up, so I wouldn't do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've only made movies that I wrote, so I would never make a movie from someone else's book.
How about if you could get someone else to do it?
Well, The Confederacy of Dunces is a book that seems to be cursed because it's a great novel. I think it would make a great movie and nobody can get it made. So that would be and it's such a great book that they'd ruin it. That's the problem. If you really love a book, the movie's never that good usually. Once in a while it is, but generally it's a letdown.
Kind of comes back to what you were saying about recording audiobooks. I think there's an intimacy to a book and it's such
there
a direct
is,
communication
then
and then you're declaiming
books.
It.
Bad books make good movies sometimes.
Oh.
like Valley of the Dolls and, you know, that kind of thing bad books make better movies.
Although I do love that book.
I hate that book. I hated Jacqueline Suzanne. I didn't think everyone loves her. I like the idea of her. I like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls by Russ Meyer, which she sued against, which I get why. no, I didn't think it was enjoyable to read Valley of the Dolls. I think the movie was enjoyable. I don't think the book's enjoyable to read. The titles are. I liked Peyton Place. Now that's a book I like.
That's one of my favorite books. Yes. And I saw it there.
I have all the sequels to Peyton Place. Look
back?
At that.
Come
no,
on, look.
Come here. These are really well. I don't know if they're rare because no one would want them but me. But where did you see Peyton Place?
I saw Return to.
Okay.
About that.
But then look at these aren't even by her. All the knockoffs, Thrills of Peyton Place, Pleasures of Peyton Place, Temptations of Peyton Place, Nice Girl from Peyton Place. All these like cheap paperbacks came out that ripped it off. I have all of them too.
Oh, and there's the original.
Yeah.
It's above H is the Heroine. It's straddling.
It's who's it by? Return to Peyton Place. Yeah, yeah. So Grace Metellus, I went to her grave. I did everything. I went to her grave.
But when
did
she die?
Little town. Oh, in the 60s or a long time ago.
I realized it was that early.
Oh, yeah. She drank herself to death, kind of. And there's a good biographies of her. Inside Peyton Place is really good. The tight white collar. She had the best titles. But yes, Grace Metellus and that famous author picture where she's sitting there in her lumberjack and her dirty ponytail typing. I have that on my desk.
Do you have a favorite author picture of yourself?
Of myself? I hate all pictures of myself. I have to do it, and I do it. But I don't, give kill file ones, the ugliest pictures of you. Right.
It's not like, Albert Einstein with that, and you're like,
Yeah, the Candy Darling t-shirt on. There's that great book, Candy Darling, the pink one with the lock and everything. That's a great book.
I know Candy Darling, the person, but I don't think I know that book.
And she cooperated. It came out when she was alive.
Because I know they just made that.
And it comes with a lock, like a diary.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's pink.
I'm going to try to hunt that down. I'm a sucker for a book with accessories.
Yeah.
Would you ever do a smell of it? Not, well, it wouldn't be smell of vision, would it?
No, smell
of vision. Odorama, but a scratch and sniff book.
No, but I have some books that a friend gave me that were really rare and really great, like How to Skyjack a Plane and instructions for submachine guns and all, but they had mold in them. And I took them to my friend took them to the Met, and they, for a huge amount, they treated them and everything. So I had them to get the mold out.
How much does that cost?
Hundreds.
I wonder how you get that job. I wonder at what point.
Well, it's a Met, certainly you're a conservator.
But
for not just books, for everything, right?
But whether there's anyone in it, they're not necessarily there for the rare treasures. They're just really good at mold solutions.
Well, I think they have to be both. They know what to do when something has mold, and they have to treat it. And it's mold can spread really quickly, can kill you. So it is a highly trained job, right? But mold and books is the enemy of libraries. And these books were so great, I couldn't throw them out. I wanted to keep them.
What do you do with the books in other places? Do you have anyone making sure that everything is sort of in,
Yes, because I go there. I mean, I'm going to my New York apartment this week. The one in San Francisco I go to enough. I don't know if they check the books, but yes, if there was an earthquake and they went in, all the books were on the floor, I'd hear, yeah.
You'd That's know my if fear. There was anything, yeah. anything going awry. I think I read...
And I have in... my San Francisco, some of the most lewd titles all out, which I do feel bad every time I have to get a new cleaning person if they have to look at it, And I mention it. I say, look, I just want to warn you, this is a collection. It's not like I'm a complete pervert pornographer here, but some of them are really rude, the titles, and they're face out. And I've met, and so far it's been all right, but they just say, we don't look, but it's impossible not to look because they're all through the apartment.
I mean, you'd hope, wouldn't you, if they know San Francisco, they'd go in with an open mind and an open heart.
Well, San Francisco has all kinds of people. People are religious there. People are, you don't know what each person's like, and it's none of my business what they're like. But unfortunately, my business is right out there if they clean my apartment. It's not like an Airbnb where you just go in and you can clean it and there's no personal things around. This is an insane collection of crazy books. So I think, so far so good. Nobody's ever...
Can you tell me the filthiest title in that collection?
The filthiest title? I think... God, I mean... I don't know, the ones I have to walk past, Pussy Island, always makes me, Pacific Rimming. Motorcycle Girl Sore Bottom. Bend Over Pig, that's the one where a motorcycle cop is getting fucked by a hippie.
Now, that's a switcheroo.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just picturing the cover art, and it's kind of beyond, I'm sure.
It's pretty good. And that one is face out. That's what I mean, when the poor person who's dusting has to look at that. But I can't go through every time and hide everything. Now, all the artwork is covered in black, which I do whenever I leave both apartments, so the light doesn't damage it. So it looks kind of creepy anyway when you come in. It's like Lent in a satanic church.
Satanists have Lent.
Do they? I don't know. The Satanic Temple's pretty great. They're activists against church and state. They're great.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask about some books up here from these Satanic Temple books. May I?
Yeah. No, the ones that said juvenile delinquency, those little panels.
Oh, these,
I think what they are those altered Christian things that came out in the 50s, and they alter it to be pro.
Oh, because these are, I mean, they're so lovely because they're so
but these
slight.
Are things, the Christians used to give these out. I haven't even looked at them, but basically it's saying it's kind of a parody on those things that Christians used to give out against anti-Halloween or anti, you know, so this is...
Chapbooks.
Yeah.
Hey, Ashley, me and the gang are going out to drink irresponsibly and have fun at everybody else's expense. Want to come? No thanks, Kyle. I'm going home to do homework.
Yeah. That one's what, juvenile delinquency? Yeah, yeah. So they just gave me these. I got these recently. They're, and you see, once they're put in the system, I have the little green tag that knows that they're in. But
did you ever go to the house in San Francisco?
No, that's the Satan. That's different. That's Anton LaVey. They're hucksters, and that is totally not them. They make fun of them.
Gotcha.
I'm not listening. Because they were like satanic church advice. Don't go to that one.
The one, the Satan. That was the one. That's not there anymore. Anyway, it was Anton LaVey. And he was, I mean, he was a huckster, but still it was funny. I mean, Jane Mansfield went there for, but the Satanic Temple is very, very different. They are activists for against church and state, and they win a lot of lawsuits, and they're great. They're funny.
Do you have a favorite memoir or biography? Or
I like biographies. There's one by Klaus Kinski that got banned, the first edition of it, which is really shocking. There's usually different bios. Susan Smith, my daughter, about the mother, the woman who killed her children. Her mother wrote a book. Talk about obscure. So I really like Nancy Spungen's mother's book about what a tragedy it was to have Sid Vicious. And her, you know, her daughter was a monster, too, she admits. So that's pretty good. So usually obscure, notorious people's relatives. So the Jeffrey Dahmer's father wrote a very good book.
Oh, really? Because you think, don't you, that it's sort of that, you know, Mommy Dearest, the kids getting revenge on their terrible parents. But I like this genre of parents talking about how shitty their children are.
No, well, they're trying to say Jeffrey Dahmer said, I maybe wasn't a good father, but was I that bad? You know, I mean, basically that's a message. And Nancy Spungen's mother was, I hated her too. I mean, I loved her. She was my daughter, but she was incredibly difficult. And that I'm not sorry she's dead. She didn't say that, but kind of she did, because it was a relief, because she had tried every single thing to help her daughter. And, you know, sometimes junkies are impossible to, you can't make them get sober. Yeah. But they're all split up. They're in all different places. If it's a biography about somebody in San Francisco, it's pretty much in San Francisco. Yeah, in New York there and here, just my favorite all time. I think my favorite books are still in this house. Not completely. In New York, I have a couple favorite ones. My favorite novel ever is Two Serious Ladies by Jane Bowles. And that original...
I love that book.
That original first edition is in New York.
When did you read it? Can you remember?
I read it in the 60s because Tennessee Williams always said it was his favorite book. So I read it a long time ago. I read it when I worked on the Provincetown Bookshop, yeah.
That is the most comprehensive collection of Tennessee Williams I've ever seen in or outside.
Well,
library.
You should go to that bookshop in New Orleans. There's one, the Faulkner bookshop. They have even more, probably. But yes, and I wrote the introduction to Tennessee Williams' memoirs when it was re-released. That was in my book, Role Model. So I've been a fan of Tennessee's forever. He, even his supposed bad stuff, his later stuff, I like it. And what great titles. I mean, is there a better title than Suddenly Last Summer? Mm. I mean,
when I was a teenager, I was a real nerd for him. And I think that was it, just hearing the names of those
plays. How do you
be
a nerd for Tennessee Williams?
And you have to put the hours in.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a, I mean, I had nothing else to do when I was a teenager, so that was
fun. So you just read Tennessee Williams.
Well,
me too. I read him when I was 15 too, and he was a ticket out. He was a, let me see that there was Bohemia, and there was something completely different that I could escape to.
It's a real, like, you know, those, right on the line between glamour and squalor.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on there. It's
well,
great.
When they first asked him on TV if he was gay, he said, well, I cover the waterfront. Let's put it that way. Which was a hilarious answer.
What was that? I've just been reading a biography of Eve Babbitt's, and she's talking about...
Oh, I read a lot of her books, yeah, yeah, and I read the biography too, yeah.
Oh, what did you think?
Well, I liked her, and well, that she's alive today, right? And she's also doesn't... It's kind of maybe bitter about, but she likes that she's having this revival, you know.
The thing I like the most about that biography is that you cannot get her to do anything unless you, like, make her wait to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she just wants to get her food and go.
Yeah. She's not too... She's not too happy. Well, I think she's happy to be rediscovered. I think she is. But at the same time, she wants money.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Because the thing that broke my heart as well is that she, you know, she doesn't have a TV anymore because she was ordering too much stuff from, like, home shopping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's a good biography,
but
yeah.
What's that? I can't remember which artist boyfriend it was, but someone was saying, you know, about her going out with, I think, a couple of guys who are sort of mostly gay.
Yeah.
And her line was like, well, he's not totally gay and we have a lot of fun, which I thought was great.
Well, a lot of, I mean, Ricky Lake once said to me, what smart woman's first boyfriend in high school didn't turn out to be gay?
That is an excellent line. Has Ricky Lake written any books?
Yes, I wrote the introduction to it. She did write a book.
Oh,
yep.
Fab. We don't have to go and find it, but are they?
It's all upstairs, you know. I didn't know you were going to want a book tour here. You know, well, especially at 6:45 in the morning.
It is early.
Oh, you know what? Those books are in here. They're at my office. All the books that I'm in or that have anything about me in it are over at my office. They aren't even here. But that would be with that, because it would be books with all people that I've worked with and that kind of thing.
I appreciate it is different for every book, but can you tell me a bit about the process of writing an introduction? Does it flow, or some harder than others?
Oh, reading an introduction is a pain. You have to read the book twice. First of all, to read it, then to make notes, and then usually the person that asks you to read it is your friend, which makes it, you know, so it's awkward if you don't like it. But I've never had to write a book. Intro for a book I didn't like. I usually say no. But it's just like writing a book review is endless too, because you have to read the book, then you have to make all the notes for it, then you have to write it, then you have to annotate it for the lawyers and things. So writing a book review is one of the most labor-intensive journalistic jobs you can do.
I have a feeling I know how you are going to take this idea, and I don't think you're going to like it, but I would really, really love it if you had a Reese Witherspoon-style John Waters book club.
Well, a book club, I certainly have recommended books a million times. I've picked for many magazines my favorite books. I always talk about books in interviews that I'd like. So I feel like I have one anyway. And I wrote a whole chapter in Role Models about my 5 favorite books. So I've already, there's my book club to start. Yeah.
So you've got, I cannot persuade you to have like stickers with your face on.
No, I'm not going to do that. No. I would. Well, who knows what I'd do. You know, I never thought I would do some things I've done. So I'm not against doing a book club. It's just that I'm so busy now to think of another job would be beyond me. Then I'd never be able to read. There's so many of them. I'm just saying it's the most exciting thing is to find an author that you like and then read, binge all that person's books, which I did with Ivy Compton Burnett, which she's so hard to read. Most people, when Borders was a store here, they asked me for a book to recommend and I did it and they said we sold so many copies and every person brought it back. One of her books, it doesn't matter which one, they're all hard to read. Yeah. And they said they sold a lot and every single person brought it back and said, I can't read this. Which make me even like her more.
Like you said, you know, you like a challenge.
Yeah,
like
well, I like, but that's the thing. I had heard of her and I had never read one. And then once you read one, then you find out she has 18 other books or something. You think, wow, you hate to finish the last one when that happens. No, that can go over a long period. I spaced it out so I could always have one I could take with me, a new one.
I feel a little bit that way about local author Anne Tyler. You know, you get into her and there's so much.
Anne's my friend too. She's great. And she's very different than you expect. You know, she's opinionated. We disagree a lot on books. I love to argue books with Anne. But I agree. I think she's an absolutely wonderful writer. And not just because she writes about Baltimore. She could write about anywhere and she'd be a brilliant writer.
Has there been anyone that you were completely impressed or terrified to meet writing-wise?
Oh, well, the ones that I really like, I never got to meet Janae. I didn't meet Tennessee Williams. At the very end, I was in a room that he was in, and he looked kind of inebriated, and it was late at night, and he was at a table eating in a restaurant, so I wasn't going to go over and barge to meet him. of the over... Let me see, walk over here. I did meet Edward Albee, and I got along with him fine. He was great.
Where did you meet him?
I met him probably in Provincetown or New York. Both, I think. Of all the authors over here, James Purdy, I did meet. And Tally, we talked about Julian Barnes. I mean, I loved his new book, which is really, really good.
The other story.
Yes, it's really, really hilarious. I just finished it, and I had lunch with him in London last week. Who else here? Let me see. James Purdy, William Burroughs. I met Janae. Of course, I never met Margarita Duras. I did meet once. William Inch. Certainly, I did. She was grouchy, and you know, she said, "I don't care if anybody likes my movies." You know. I certainly never met Baron Corvo or Ronald Furbank. I would have loved to. John Fowles, I never met. All right, let's go over this side. I'm just trying to think. Now you're making me name drop.
It's good.
I met Gene Reason. Pasolini, obviously, I never met. Elena Ferrante. I've spoken a lot about her, but obviously I never met her. No one has, or knowingly.
For a second, I thought you were going to clue us in on the secret.
No. Mary Morris, I love her. I've met her. Am I what?
I said, are you Elena Ferrante?
I'm very much so, very much so. Let's see here. Who we got here? John Retchie, I never met. Bret Easton Ellis, I did. Norman Mailer, I did. Philip Hoare is my friend. We talked about him.
Oh, I see Rachel Cusk.
Oh, I love her. I'm a huge fan of hers, and I have met her. I'm a really, really think she's one of the best writers today of all. I adore her.
John Retchie wrote so many books.
He's still writing them.
Is he really?
Yes.
I had no idea.
I mean, I'm trying to think what his most recent one is, but yeah, John Retchie. What's this one? This might be a later one, yes. About My Life and the Kept Women. So yes, I would say that John Retchie has a lot of books. Yes, definitely. And he's in L.A., and maybe still hustling.
Damn, we were just there. Maybe we should go back. Do you think you will always be writing books as long as...
I hope so. You know, as long as I can think. I can't imagine people say, why don't you retire? I think if I retired, I'd drop dead. So hopefully. You know, I'm working on a novel now called Liar Mouth that I signed a two-book deal, the one that did Mr. Know-It-All with FSG. So I'm in the middle of writing that. So right after the Christmas tour, I'll go back to that. I'm on page 163 in the first draft.
How are you feeling about it? I mean, I guess, you know, you have so many stories.
I'm always nervous. But I'm always excited about it. How am I feeling about it? I'm feeling good about it, I think. It's, you know, it's not like I've never written a novel, even though I've written a million films. The first two parts of Car Six were fiction, because I imagine the best and the worst, but I was in it, which makes it easier.
Sort of auto-fiction. You just got the loveliest look on your face then when you were talking about your novel, like when you've met, you know, when a person's met someone, like, oh, you know, it's early days, but I'm really excited.
Well, I am excited about it, yeah, and it's, we'll see. I'll go right back to that January 2nd.
Can you tell us anything about
that?
No, bad
luck to talk about something before you do it.
Right. I mean, I'm sure I absolutely respect that, but I had to ask.
No, it's called Liar Mouth, and it's about a woman who steals suitcases in airports.
I cannot wait for that. I cannot wait.
So that's it, pretty much. Let me think over here. Wait a minute. Let me see if there's any other ones that we didn't talk about, because there are people over here. Yes, definitely. Gorby Dow, I did meet, actually. Oh. James McCord, I like him. I've met him. Dennis Cooper, yes, he's great.
What is this?
Oh, somebody gave me that. It's the dirt from John Wayne Gacy's lawn. Oh. Some fan sent me that. What do you do with that? You know, you don't throw it out.
You display it on your bookcase.
Yeah. That should be in the true crime section, which is upstairs.
Is there any significance to the ones over here poking out?
That's actually fake. Let me show you. That is a CD case.
Oh!
Disguised as a book. And I went to thrift shops and found every book to get the spine, the titles that I thought would be okay.
Oh, like I said, you made this.
I didn't. My friend Michael Halstall made it. Yep.
And
have you read the Ouija book? The new one?
Yeah, it's good. I have all Ouija. I met Ouija.
God, tell us
about
that.
Yeah, I met Ouija at the Bridge Theater in New York when he showed his movies and talked in probably 66 or 5 or something. I even have a tape of it.
Wow. He was
great. I'm a huge fan of Ouija. I have a Ouija photograph of Johnny Ray downstairs.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you the last thing. So I know you're pals with
Werner Herzog, and he recently said that he thinks his books will outlive his films, and they'll be, his prose writing will be seen as being more important, and everyone will forget about his films, and but the books will be remembered. I wonder if you felt the same way.
I hope they remember any of it. That's how I'd put it.
It's all a win.
Yeah. I mean, the films have already been remembered for 50 years, some of them. So they're on the way. They already have been. And the books are all still in print. So who knows? Once you're dead, we'll see. Then that's when people always say to me, I'm an artist. I would say, I believe I'll be the judge of that. Or history will be the judge of that. So we'll see. We'll see if they remember everything. I won't know. So either way, I think I've done my work. Yeah, so that I've done, you know, I have, what, 17 movies, 8 books. That's a lot. Yeah.
Huge thanks to John. Do read Mr. Know-It-All. It's a brisk, filthy, moving antidote to January gloom. Well, all gloom and ennui. I'm Daisy Buchanan, and I've been your book inspector. Thank you so much for joining me, fellow bibliomaniacs. You can find me on Twitter at NotRollerGirl and on Instagram at TheDaisyBee. Say hello, suggest some guests, and watch out for shelfies. Visit our show page, acast.com/booked, for more information about our guest and a list of the books they've talked about. If you have any other queries about the podcast, you can email us at whybooked@gmail.com. Your Booked is produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and hosted by Acast. Please do subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. It's great to hear what you think, and it helps other people find the podcast. For now, I leave you with this from Dorothy Parker. If you have any young friends who aspire to become writers, the second greatest favour you can do them is to present them with copies of The Elements of Style. The first greatest, of course, is to shoot them now while they're happy.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.